Remember that time when we all thought Reading were really boring? Well, it's not how it is anymore. Nowadays, we score goals, we just don't defend. Who needs defending in a relegation battle? It's not defences that win you tournaments, it's attacks. That's how the saying goes, right? Welcome to the Tireless Den, episode number 155. What is effectively becoming a fortnightly affair now because of all the postponements and everything. But we'll be here this week talking about Bolton and the Leeds draws. And we'll be next week down at the Star Hall of Fame unveilment. Myself and Ben Greenwood, hopefully down there for that at the Medeski. So a bit of a special next week. This week, the old-fashioned sticking the boot into Yapstam and talking about where Reading have gone wrong and right this week. And joining me to do that is the editor of the Tilehurst10.com, and that is Simeon Pickup, a.k.a. Bucks Royal. How's it going, mate?
I'm very well. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I didn't get down to the Leeds game, so I was working, but I went to the Bolton game, and I think I got kind of the raw deal in a sense, because the week before I went to the Derby game, but not the Sheffield United game, and got the better end of the deal, and maybe this time I got the raw end of the deal. But, you know, it was nice to see Alfie and Jem. That's what I take from the Bolton game.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Good to have some fan favourites back at the Medeski, even if they're not in blue and white hoops.
Of course, and we'll be talking about that and the Leeds game in the recap, which I will just say quickly is that, of course, our Patreon campaign, I know I don't mention it probably as much as I should have, but it's always there for the Tireless Den sort of virtual tip jar. It goes into all kinds of little sort of audio and video bits that we try and do, just the technology to make sure that it goes a little bit smoother, to make sure that the audio quality of what you're listening to now. It recently went in to go into a microphone for the podcast extra to make sure that Tom and Ollie have good audio quality there, because we know there was some feedback on the audio quality for that. So that's why the Patreon campaign is still there. It's always got a link up in the Tireless Den podcast website page that we have for this. And I'll just leave that there for you guys. If you feel the need to help us out, that is always much appreciated. We'll have to go on to the recap now and talk about the games that we have had this week.
The view from the Tilehurst end. Recapping all this week's action.
Bolton 1, Reading 1. Leeds 2, Reading 2. Both down at the Medeski Stadium. Both points taken or 2 points dropped. These as games, Sim, I'm not entirely sure whether everyone is agreeing with the sense that these are good points to take or sort of 2 points dropped, as I say. So what I'm going to ask you is, what was the difference between these two games? I felt like in Bolton we were lucky not to concede more and that our attacks were quite stilted, but in Leeds our attacks were much better, but the defence was still quite rocky, wasn't it?
Yeah, the defence was rocky in both of them, to be honest, and I think the lack of experience in the team is paying very much showing itself up at the moment. If you look at the defence, the back four, the back five, even a couple of midfielders in front of it, there aren't many really experienced players who are going to bark out orders, get everyone organised, help other players to manage the game in the same way that we have had in the last couple of years. If you look at people like Alhabsi, McShane, even Tommy Elphick for one game or so, they're the kind of people that you need to really grab the game by the scruff of the neck, do the dirty work, and just kind of drag everyone else through a situation. If you just conceded a goal or if you're under a lot of pressure, you need players who have been there before and done it. But in people like Thiago Alori, Liam Moore, they're talented defenders, but they don't have a lot of know-how. They don't have that grit and experience that you get with someone like McShane or Alhabsi last season, perhaps Kermit last season as well. And I just feel like we've really suffered from that in the last two games, all season, but in the last couple of games, absolutely.
I want to get onto the defence in a little bit, but at first I want to talk about how the game was sort of played by Reading, because we've been talking all season, or all under the Stam period, in fact, how Yapstam likes his way of playing, how he's very stubborn in that. And this, we've actually seen these last couple of games, he's changed it. He did mention after the Bolton game that Reading were a bit more long ball orientated, which I think we were against Leeds as well. You look at the stats, we barely kept the possessional advantage in either game. We averaged about 64% passing accuracy, which is really rather low, even for Championship level. I know this is kind of going to sound a bit silly, but we've almost gone too far the other way, haven't we? We've lost that ability to put our foot on the ball when we need to, when we're ahead and there's 5 minutes left in the first half. just put your foot on the ball, knock it round at the back. Obviously, if you're getting pressure, you need to clear it because teams do like to pressure us. But we have gone into a sort of a different phase of playing our football now, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, it's all about the balance, really. It's not about being a really good passing team. It's not about being a really good long ball direct team. It's about having that balance in the middle of being able to keep the ball when you need to take the sting out of the game, or to be patient and to gradually break down a team. But then other times when you need to kick it long to either relieve pressure on your defence or to get the ball forward more quickly for an attack, you need to be able to do both of those as and when you need to do it. I felt that we were a lot better in the first half of the Leeds game because we were pretty good at doing that. We were comfortable on the ball around our own back four. We could knock it about and keep it when we needed to, even moving it up into the midfield quite nicely. But also when we saw an opportunity to get into the final third with a long ball, particularly over the top to John Daddy Bodvarsson, who was really good at holding the ball up with his back to goal and making runs down the channel, it worked really well. But then as the game went on, our game management got a lot worse. We seemed to lose a lot of cohesion when the midfield changed around in the second half. Dave Edwards and John Swift came on for Evans and Clement, who I thought had been very good up until that point. They were very good at being composed, keeping the ball, moving around nicely, but they also had a bit of an edge in terms of tackling and getting forward and having an end product, although none of them scored on the day.
Yeah, I think it's important to recognise the fact that we did actually create quite a few chances against Leeds in the first half in particular. Sort of as you say, the thing is that we didn't take them. There was a couple of sort of one-on-ones. Barrow had one in a chance. The goal that that Bodvarsson scored in, you know, from transitioning defence to attack, it was a fantastic move. And I think every Reading fan wants to see that sort of football, and we have to praise that when it happens. Aluko played a really nice ball in. I think there was acres of space to play it into, but he found the space to create that chance. And you know, when you get into these positions, 1-0 up in the Championship game, it is game management. It's just that buzz phrase that I have in my mind. And it's still absolutely shocking, isn't it? We have no ability to kill a game. There was the Jarkola blunder. I think it was when it was 2-2, when Losoga closed him down and it hit the post and almost crept in. That sort of thing is game management. That is knowing when to get rid of the ball, when to keep it. At 2-2 at home, I would personally say it's a time to get rid of it and get it forward. And, you know, let's move on to the defence then. We've conceded 7 goals in the last 10 minutes of first half games this season. So 7 overall isn't so bad. However, 5 of those last 7 have been in our 6 games. In 4 games in a row now, we've conceded on the verge of half time. This isn't a coincidence, is it? There's no smoke without fire.
No, I think it's just a lack of confidence, really. Something that's rearing its head every week now, and it has the effect of just making everyone switch off. You need everyone to just be on their game throughout the match, always be alert, always be aware of the danger. And particularly if you look at, say, the Leeds game and the Derby game as well, Bolton as well, when we were doing quite well in the first half, I wonder if they've just switched off and thought, we just need to get through to half time, but they're not fully aware to the danger that those teams have had. And it, as I said earlier, it needs someone with experience to get them organised, to bark out orders and to make sure that they're keeping a high standard throughout the entire half.
You say that, but then on the dugout in the technical area, we have one of the most experienced former defenders in Europe who has played for all kinds of teams and who has, you know, been at the top level as a centre back, who was a vocal centre back. He knew what he was doing. So is it Stam that isn't producing that or providing that and being that leadership from the technical area? Or is it the players? Because, I mean, we've conceded 33 shots at home in the last 2 games, both to sort of mid-table / lower mid-table teams. That is 33 shots in total. So is it Stam that is actually the cause of this sort of switching off, or is it the players?
I think it's a bit of both, really. It's not helped when you have McShane and Elphick, two of the more experienced players, out injured for a couple of weeks now. But Stam should have woken up to the fact quite a while ago that that was a danger, and that people like Ilori and Moore we're going to have to rely on in games like this. And at the end of the day, it's up to him to personally coach those players so that their decision making gets better, so that they don't switch off. And it's not exactly like this is a new thing. Even last season, the defending wasn't exactly pretty for a lot of the season. So these are all things that he needs to work on the pitch, on the training ground even. But equally, it's not completely his fault, because you can only really rely on the players in the moment making decisions.
Yeah, I think the thing is that when it comes to sort of what Stam's role is, I think the one thing that I always try and sort of pick out as a manager is that as a back four, you want consistency. And I've no doubt that if all our players were fit every week, we would have a greater degree of consistency. But in these last seven games that we haven't won, we started against Millwall with a back three. Middlesbrough, we then went to a back four, so we changed the system with one personnel change. Elphick went out because he was injured, so fair enough. Forest, away, back four. One player moved position. Bakuna moved from fullback to midfield, and we had another personnel change. Derby, we kept the same team. Sheffield United, we moved back to a back three. We had two changes, including one positional, because Gunter moved across to left back. Bolton, back four. Gunter stays at left back, but Capella Clement moves in at right back, and we have another personnel change in amongst that as well. Tom Holmes comes in. Then Leeds, it's a back four, and there's two more further changes as Holmes drops out of the team, and we keep sort of shifting things around again. Clement moves up the pitch, etc., etc. So these lineups that we're producing, I mean, how is any defender meant to have consistency? That how is Liam Moore meant to have consistency when the person alongside him on both sides is different every week?
I don't think he can realistically have complete confidence in the next person that's, well, in the person that's next to him, because you're always going to have that extra split second of doubt that the person next to you, maybe he's going to do his job properly, maybe he's not. Do I have to cover for him? Do I have to make one run or another? And it's hard for these players to predict. They need to be able to instinctively say, this is what I'm going to do in a situation, because I know that the guy to the left of me and the guy to the right of me are doing their jobs properly. And if you have to having to constantly think, what am I to expect from the guy next to me, or in fact the goalkeeper behind you, because that's changed in the last couple of weeks as well, they can't be confident, they can't be composed as they need to be. But equally, I look at the injuries that we've had this season, and it's not too straightforward to have a consistently picked back four, back five, or whatever. Because Richards has been injured a lot in the last couple of weeks. Abita all season. Gunter's had to go everywhere. Bakuna as well. And it's hard to put out a consistent defence. So although some of it is Stam's fault, a lot of it, he's been faced with some big problems in terms of team selection that has come from his injury problems.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we're going to keep looking for who to blame, I suppose maybe the recruitment is the next person that you look at. Again, we've had this for a number of years with Chris Gunter as our right back, not really having any backup. Tenai Watson's fitness, again, the fitness issue hasn't been straightforward, but Blackett, we've got a left-back emphasis with Blackett, Obisa, and Richards, centre-backs coming and going. So, you know, hopefully it's something that we won't have to talk about, this sort of lack of consistency as the run-in proceeds to continue, but it just continues to be something that that nags on our minds. And it is that lineup. But throughout Yap Stam, certainly this season, we've all known as Reading fans, picking the team has been a bit of a lottery at times, and it continues to be that way with the defence. And I think it's just having that impact now. I will quickly run you through to round off the recap what Stam said after the Leeds game. He said, we created a couple of very good chances in the first half, scored one but should have scored more. We began the game very committed but also playing good football at times, making the right decisions to go longer at the right time. The goal we did get was a great team goal. If the belief is there, the spaces are there, the weight of the pass is good, we know we can play very good football and score very good goals. And the buzzword there is belief. It has been a lack of confidence that has affected Reading this season a lot of times, and I think that's probably why goals, when we've conceded them, have sort of knocked the stuffing out of us.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole body language seems to change from the players when a goal goes in. Even last season or in previous years, particularly under, say, McDermott a couple of years ago, if a goal went in, there was a real belief that it was only one goal, Reading could get back into it, they could get another goal themselves. but now the belief isn't there. They just, their heads drop. And it's weird almost, just how quickly the negativity seems to just flow into them as soon as something like that happens. It's something you've got to get on top of, but equally, when you're going through a really tough season, when everything is as bad as it is, it's hard to stop it. It's a bit of a snowball effect, because I guess when one or two goals go in against Sheffield United, they're thinking, oh, well, we conceded against Derby before that. Are we really going to be able to get into this game? And the Leeds game as well, when they concede a goal, they're thinking back to how bad things have been in the last couple of weeks. Are we going to get back into the game? Do we have the confidence to do it? And at the moment, the answer's no.
Do you think, I was going to end it there, but I just had a question pop into my mind. Do you think the players will be happy when the season's over? Do you think they want this season to end? Because obviously there's a lot of frustration. People like Liam Moore have gone on Twitter and talked about how you know, we will get there, etc., etc. I think maybe if we had one win that sort of saved us or whatever, if that was next week and we beat Wolves on Tuesday night and you offered it to the players, that's the end of the season, I think they'd bite your hand off. I think they would say, yes, please, get it over and done with. We're safe. Forget about it. Let's get, you know, let's have some time off and regroup. And because that sort of belief and everything that we're talking about, that you don't turn that overnight unless you maybe do something as drastic as change the manager.
I think the season's just become tainted now in so many different ways, in terms of how bad the defending has been, injuries, question over the manager, relations between the fans and players, and lots of other ways. And from the point of view of a player, you just want to put it to one side, go off, have a break, and then come back refreshed next season. A lot of the problems we have at the moment, yeah, you can try and sort them on the training ground, but when they're all kind of stacking up, they're getting interwoven, things like confidence and keeping the ball, at the end of the day, all we can really do is just hope that we don't go down and we're in a good position to regroup in the summer.
Whether we like it or not, there will be another 10 games, of action in the Championship. That begins on Tuesday at Wolverhampton Wanderers away from home, the rearranged fixture. We'll be talking about that at the end of the show in any other business. But now it's time for News Bites, where we will be talking about the youth teams and filling you in on what has been going on around the club in the past week.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Lack of action is the phrase I would say for the lower teams and the other teams, the alternative teams at Reading, the successful teams at Reading in a way as well, because there hasn't been a women's game since we were last on. They face Yeovil on Wednesday, who they've lost every game, Yeovil, so it's certainly a good chance for Reading to continue and bolster their sort of mid-table security, as it were, even though there is no relegation this season. The under-18s haven't played either. They go to Southampton on Saturday as they continue their league season. And the under-23s have played last Monday. They beat West Brom 2-0. This Monday, they face Aston Villa away from home. That's sort of second versus fourth in a bit of a Premier League second division promotion battle, sort of ding-dong that is. So keep an eye on that one, or if you're listening afterwards, you'll obviously know the result. Can check up on that. Tyler Sten news comes from Omar Richards winning the Player of the Month competition for February. He also picked up the lesser well-known Reading Football Club official Player of the Month reward. Sim, any arguments with that? I think Mo Barrow was also in contention, perhaps Liam Kelly.
No, it's got to be Omar Richards for me. He's really come on in the last couple of weeks. He's looking more confident, looking more composed, and I guess at the start of the season it looked like he was not really fitting in as much as he could do because he was so recently out of youth team football, but now he's looking really like a player who belongs in the first team. And if Jordan Abita does come back long term and properly gets on top of his fitness, then he's going to have a big fight on his hands to get that left back spot back under his belt.
Yeah, I'm very happy with having Jordan Abita and Omar Richards as our left back pairing moving forward. And who knows, maybe a new manager, if he comes in the summer or later in the season, thinks that Obito is someone to move further forward, then you've got two very good players in the team instead of two competing for one spot. I think with Omar Richards, you just get a player who, as a left back, I just don't think he makes many mistakes, and that's so refreshing. It's very much a consistency. I just want a 6 out of 10 every week. I don't want to have to pick him out and say, you were bad for this moment. You don't even have to be excellent for any moments. Just get that basic level in, and let the other players do the absolutely essential stuff of scoring goals and whatnot. The other news for News Bites is that Gaffer Cleary is out for the rest of the season. He confirmed this on Instagram. He broke his ankle in the game against Sheffield United a few weeks ago, this was. And he's been out since, or went off in the fourth minute. We haven't really heard about it because the club don't really tend to be very good at telling us who's injured and why they're injured, etc. So in Spain, they have medical reports where they use the exact technical term of the player's injury. So, for instance, Atletico Madrid's goalkeeper Jan Oblak had a gluteus injury, which most of us know as the bum cheek. So those sort of things go on in other countries. Reading, we get nothing. We get players' Instagrams telling us that they're out for the season. McCleary, I mean, we'll obviously be able to dissect the season a little bit better in a few months' time, Sim, but he's not someone that will be able to look back on this campaign now it's over for him with much joy, sadly.
No, it's been frustrating. It's been stop-start. It's been everything we didn't need from him, to be honest, because you need that experienced option higher up, and we haven't been able to get it out of him, annoyingly. He was very good at the start of last season. I think he was our top scorer for a couple of months before Jan Kerber really kicked in. And I hoped he could kick on again this season. But annoyingly, his fitness problems just don't seem to clear up. Going back a couple of years now, he's just been so racked with injury, just random things seemingly, constantly, and we haven't been able to get an awful lot out of him, which is frustrating. And I guess at the age of, I think it's 30 at the moment, he's probably not going to be able to come back long term and have a big impact. But despite that, he's been a good servant for us over the last couple of years, despite not playing a huge amount. It's good to have long-term players who are here, settled at the club, and him and Chris Gunter have been good personalities for the club.
I think the thing is with McCleary is that if he can come back from this, and, you know, as you say, he's into his sort of twilight of his career in effect now, especially for a winger, someone who's going to have to look after his body perhaps a lot more than he's used to doing, and not play as many games as he wants, perhaps. But the thing is that he's a winger who relies on his pace so much. He's not probably going to be able to do that much more going forward. So he's going to have to adapt his game. And I think if he does adapt his game, and we've seen him play down the middle and the way how he can unleash a shot and everything like that, if he can become more intelligent and more sort of thoughtful as a player, then I see no reason why he can't sort of become a bit more of a playmaker type, a bit more of someone who maybe even plays off the shoulder of a striker and delivers the incisive blow rather than someone who runs around the outside, because I don't think that's what he's going to be able to do much. And if he adapts his game, if he works hard at it, then hopefully he'll get there. But obviously this is the start of that road, should he even choose to take it. And that is it for News Bites, because we will be moving on now to your questions in the mailbag.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
Few questions this week then, moving on from sort of Bolton and Leeds draws. Obviously, anyone who has any general questions about the club and wants to find out things, particularly as we go into the Star Hall of Fame thing next week, if you guys see anything interesting in that, and send us some questions via the Gmail account, which is thetarlhurstend@gmail.com, or on Twitter, Facebook, and I can maybe leave you my home address as well, so you can send me some things in the post, which I definitely won't be doing. But Jack Killick has got in touch via the email, and he said, hi Mark, you've done a good job from taking over from Wim. Thank you very much for that, Jack. He's enjoying the podcast recently. My first point is about Kelly. He is just loose with some of his passes when we were in the defensive third. Nearly cost us against Bolton and did cost us against Leeds. I think he's been playing decent recently, but just needs to be careful with his sometimes sloppy passes. He has a second point. We'll sum up Kelly to begin with. Is his best position sort of being fulfilled at the moment? Do you like him being the deep line playmaker, or is he maybe just someone who generally needs to up his game and gain that experience that he's obviously a young player?
Yeah, I think he's done pretty well in the last couple of weeks, actually. Going back earlier in the season, he seemed a bit lost position-wise. Often he was played quite high up in that kind of advanced playmaker role, but you need to be more physical for that. You need to have that ability to get the ball into feet, shrug off some defenders, and then give it to someone else. which is what people like John Swift can do quite well, but it's not Liam Kelly's forte. But then restored to a more deeper role, particularly in the Derby game a couple of weeks ago and against Leeds as well, he looked a lot more comfortable. Being able to find those pockets of space in his own third, in the middle third, to pick a pass, to perhaps hoof the ball up pitch for Bob Varson to chase down, he's looking a lot more comfortable doing that. And it suits his passing range and his ability to find space in a deeper role and then look up and try and create something. Defensively, I thought he looked quite good as well, particularly in the build-up to our first goal on Saturday. It starts when Leeds are coming down the pitch and he just nips in and grabs the ball. It's not about a lot of physicality of shoving someone off the ball like Joey Vandenberg would do, for example, but he's got that intelligence, that ability to just stick his foot in and grab the ball cleanly, and then it completely changes the flow of the move and Reading can break up the pitch quickly and directly, and that's his strength. But Jack's point about how some of his passes have cost us in the last couple of weeks, completely agree. Again, there was one pass against Bolton that I presume Jack's referring to when he basically just gifted it to Adam Lafondre.
Yeah.
An awful back pass. Lafondre went through one-on-one and really should have buried it. And as it happens, I looked at Liam Kelly as soon as he played that pass and his hands went on his head. Literally, he just stood there in absolute horror that he'd done it.
He really knew, didn't he?
Yeah. And it's frustrating for him because you can tell that he's working hard. He's trying to cut things out like that. But at the end of the day, I guess it only really comes with experience of having that know-how, just constantly keeping switched on. And frustratingly, all it takes is one bad pass in a game and it costs you. And it should have done against Bolton and it did against Leeds.
I remember Aaron Cole playing in that sort of deep line playmaker role against Brentford a couple of years ago. And I mean, as you say, all it takes, I think he made a couple of bad passes, both of which led to goals. And that just sort of destroys you as a player almost overnight if you are in that position and you don't make the most of it. Friday's also tweeted us asking, Liam Kelly gives the ball away in the wrong areas. He knows he's learning, but he can think of a few bad ones in the last three games. But he also thinks that Kelly is very creative. With this in mind, should Kelly be playing further forward? I think the thing is about Kelly as a centre midfielder or central attacking midfielder is that you say about physicality. I think it's his pace is almost there. He's not quite a quick enough player. I think of sort of Frank Lampard sort of arriving into the box and Steven Gerrard sort of lung-busting runs as the ideal for a central attack midfielder. Kelly doesn't necessarily have that in his locker yet. Maybe as he gets more experience and his sort of body develops to the week in, week out championship football, he'll get that. But at the moment, I'm kind of struggling to see him as a definite player further forward. I take your point on how he's not quite got the physicality on it. The problem I have with Liam Kelly at the moment is that he doesn't seem to have a 90-minute game in him. He doesn't seem to be in it for all of it. He has a lot of great first halves, but in the second halves, I don't see him doing too much. And this is a thing that hopefully, as I say, it's going to be a case of him adapting to the stretch of the game and getting more into it. But it's just something Liam Kelly doesn't have in his locker at the moment, and I think that's a case that's going to be a factor no matter where you play him. We'll go back to Jack Killick's email now, because he said he has a second point, and that's on Dave Edwards, and he just doesn't think that he's good enough to play for Reading. I'll quote Jack here saying, "He's one of the worst midfielders with the ball at his feet that I've ever seen. Makes no sense why Stan brought him in when he doesn't fit the style of play. I would replace him in the summer. What are your thoughts?" I agree on the idea of it doesn't really click as to why we signed him, because he didn't do so well at Wolves at the start of this season, because Wolves have moved into having sort of deep line playmakers who knocked the ball around and had a central attack midfielder making the goals and the runs and everything. That's kind of how we play. It's not too different from what we do, and yet we signed him. So, I mean, what's your thoughts on Edwards?
Technically, he's completely the wrong fit for this side. He doesn't have that that range of passing that someone like Liam Kelly does. He doesn't have that that kind of creative ability higher up like John Swift does. he's not even that kind of strong in terms of tackling like Joey van den Berg. So you have to wonder what Stam thought he'd be getting from this kind of player. At the moment, all I can really think of is that he was kind of getting worried about not having a like-for-like replacement for Danny Williams, and he just wanted someone with experience in this division to come in and just offer an option in the midfield, and just give us something that we didn't have in the first place. It's not really an option that we need of that kind of... I guess he's the kind of midfielder who makes late runs into the box. He's good at heading from set pieces, but they're not really qualities that really stand out in a passing team when you need midfielders who are making runs, who are finding space. And you can tell he's trying hard and he's really trying to fit in, but it's just not coming off for him. So I feel bad for him. It's good to have that character in the squad. I guess I'd rather have him than not. That you need that experience, you need that character who's been there, done that. But unfortunately, it's not going to work out for him in the long term.
Yeah, the thing is with Edwards is that when we signed him, I was actually really pleased. I thought he's been a good player for Wolves for a long time. I was slightly suspicious that the Wolves fans were very happy to see him go. But at the end of the day, everyone knows what sort of player that Wolves are signing at the moment. Everyone knows what direction they're heading in, and having a sort of player in his late 20s, early 30s, who plays central midfield in the style of Dave Edwards isn't what they want. So that was sort of fine. Wolves offered ducks back as I took it. But then, where I would play him, I would play him off the shoulder of someone like Bod Varson. I don't think having him further back in midfield is much of a help, because we do like to build the ball out from midfield. So I would effectively play him as an attacking midfielder, have Kelly and Swift and whoever you want and Evans as the sort of playmaker / ball winners behind him, and then, you know, get it wide to Barrow, get it wide to Aluko, get it into Bod Varson's feet, and then put balls in and around the box that he can run onto. I think that's a perfectly good role for him, but it's not the role we play him in. And I'm putting my faith in Stam here, I assume there is a reason why we're not doing that. If that's for the better of the team, then obviously I'm just wrong, but if I'm right, then I don't know why we're doing it, basically. We'll probably never find out, because Stam doesn't really play a 4-2-3-1 anyway. And, you know, who knows what the managerial situation, tactical situation will be next season. Maybe it will suit Edwards down to the ground. Callum finishes off the mailbag then, asking, do you think Sunderland, having gone through not winning a home game for a year, would take pity and hand us a win? We haven't won on Saturday since, I don't know, I was about 13 years old the last time we won on a Saturday 3 p.m. We've only got three more chances now to do it, haven't we? We've got QPR, Sunderland and Ipswich, is it? Last Preston as well. Is it three of those?
There's three games, Sunderland, Ipswich and Preston. I think Ipswich is the last one of the last home game of the season.
QPR is the Friday, 5:30, yeah. Good Friday.
Yeah, so I can see us winning the QPR game purely because it's not on a Saturday. But I guess if you look at those other home games that we've got coming up, Sunderland, Ipswich and Preston, they're all winnable for different reasons. You'd hope that by the time we play Sunderland, they're basically relegated, hopefully, and they'll have nothing to play for. Ipswich will be mid-table as they always are, hopefully. Nothing to play for, straightforward win, hopefully. Preston, I hope that they're not quite there to get into the top six, and equally happy to hand us the win.
Yeah, Preston are only 4 points off the top six at the moment, and we play them in the first or second weekend of April. So it's not going to be, it's highly unlikely anyway that they're going to be out of the playoff race completely. So they'll have something to play for. But, you know, away from home, they're actually quite good. Just looking at the table now, seven wins, eight draws, three defeats away from home all season, Preston. So I'm hoping that we can get QPR, Sunderland and Ipswich under our belts. If we don't take 7 points out of that or 6 points out of that, you really do have to question who we can beat in this division. So, we'll talk about those games, obviously, as we come up to them. We've got two games to talk about now in any other business. Wolves and Norwich, both away from home. Both teams that are surprisingly out of form, and we'll be getting onto that now.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Wolves Tuesday, 7:45 p.m. kickoff. Then not on TV, I'm afraid. It might feel familiar that we're talking about this game and previewing it. That's because we've done it before. Anyone with a short memory will remember the fact that this game was postponed and is now being replayed or rearranged, should I say. What's changed since we were first when we going to Wolves Sim? Is it better? Is it worse to be playing them now? They've not done well, to be fair, have they?
No, they got absolutely battered yesterday by Aston Villa, 4-1. And for a team that's been talked up as one of the best teams ever in the Championship, to go to Aston Villa and get battered 4-1 is always a nice thing for a fan of the 106 side to see. I guess in terms of our fortunes on Tuesday, it might come back to bite us, to be honest. The fact that they've just lost out to a direct promotion rival and they're now going to be desperate to bounce back to get 3 points under their belt. I think the gap between them and Cardiff is only, what, about 3 points now?
Yeah, but it's 3 points and the goal difference, you know, there's only 6 goals between them, so it's not really very safe anymore for Wolves.
Yeah, so when we win 4 or 5 nil on Tuesday and Cardiff get a win as well, then Wolves could be second. Could very well be second. So there's pressure on them, but it's I guess it's a negative kind of pressure, to be honest. If you've got a big game and you really need to win it, say against a direct rival, then that pressure can kind of help you quite a lot. But from Wolves' point of view, they're going into a game where they can't really win. Even if they beat us 5-1, 6-1, they can't really say this is a game-changing moment, this is the game that has restored our form because of how bad we've been. They're expected to go out and win it quite comfortably. We've got absolutely no pressure. If we go there, get absolutely trounced, then it's not really that surprising. So I guess from a Wolves point of view, you're looking at it quite nervously. And every 10 minutes or so that goes without them getting a goal, the pressure starts to build. The home crowd hopefully starts to get on their back. I know they've had a very good season, so they're not going to exactly have booing in the stands, but there'll be that anxiousness, there'll be that sense that they should be beating a team like Reading, and that anything against that, say if we manage to grab a goal and go 1-0 up, then it really puts a spanner in the works.
I think the thing to remember about this Wolves team is that yes, it's very, very talented and it's obviously got had a lot of money invested in it, but it's quite young and it's quite inexperienced, and the amount of players, I mean, yes, if you played for Porto or Atletico Madrid, although Diogo Jota has never played for Atletico Madrid, you are used to run-ins that matter. You're used to, you know, being up there and competing for trophies towards the end of the season. But the Championship is always a very unique league. We can't forget how different it is, certainly to Portugal. I mean, Ruben Neves turning out for his old teams and looking for trophies in the last few years. 4 out of 5 games are easy going, and Reading shouldn't make this easy going for Wolves. We should be able to sit back a little bit and counter-attack, and the way we've been playing the last couple of games should owe itself to doing that, so long as we can, you know, bleed and defend would be a nice start for all of that. You're completely right, this is negative pressure on the Wolves team, because we can't forget about Wolves. Not only do they think they're the best Championship team in the history of the world, they also think that they've been champions since about the third week. And we are now in the 36th week. And you're right, if it's 0-0 at half-time, if we get a goal, if we equalise or get a goal back when it's 2-0 and it's suddenly 2-1, all of that they believed for 6 to 7 months will be in doubt, and we have to make the most of that. And Reading do have a very good history. We always, you know, we criticise the team a lot. Reading have a fantastic history away from home against good Championship teams, even when you go back as far as sort of Coppell, McDermott. Adkins picked up the odd win. Clark did it as well. Stam has done it plenty of times. Think back to Sheffield Wednesday last season. We do well in these games, considering how hard they're meant to be. So I think it is the perfect time to play them. We can't forget that they've had 1 win in 5. Equally, we can't forget that 1 win was a comfortable 3-0 victory over Leeds. Villa, I think it's interesting to note, only had 40% possession in that 4-1 win. And the 106 situation means that if we take anything off Wolves, then they can't match 106. At the moment, they can still only match it. So, I mean, I know you'll probably agree with me on this, but the counter-attacking performance and the way that we're going to go there you would hope is going to be quite straightforward for us.
Yeah, but it kind of relies on a lot of defensive solidity, of being able to have your back to the wall and survive a lot of pressure. And it'll be interesting to see if this Reading team has it in them when players like Thiago Ilori and other defenders, Jackler if he starts on Tuesday as well, who have had some difficult weeks now. Are they going to be able to respond to that pressure? Are they going to be able to survive a lot of Wolves' attacks for us to be able to get a counter going in the first place? But I guess also I'd look at our front line, and it's not really set up for counter-attacking football that well, with the exception of Modu Bana, who's obviously got a lot of pace. But Gareth McCleary's injured. We've got no Bairns, got no Popper. There isn't an awful lot of pace out wide for getting at Wolves on the counter. So I guess we're going to have to rely on people like Bob Arson and Martin holding the ball up quite well. And I guess Aluko as well, with his championship know-how. I know he's not showed a lot of it this season so far, but this is the game when we really need him to step up to give us that, even if it's not a really good attacking performance, just being able to do the basics right, protecting his fullback, things like that. It's a big game for him to try and deliver in.
You're absolutely right, and I think Aluko did have a decent-ish sort of game against Leeds in respect to getting that nice assist. So if you're going to build on anything, Sonny, this is the one. Important to remember, we've still got to go to Wolves, we've still got to go to Cardiff, still got to go to Villa, still got to go to Fulham. All of those are the top four at the moment. So as much as we're talking about the home form and the good games we got in that, the away form is going to be where it's difficult to pick up points. And with that in mind, we go to Norwich on the Saturday. They are very consistently inconsistent at the moment. 1-0 down at home away to Hull on the weekend. Then they went 3-1 up and they lost 4-3 at Nigel Adkins Hull. They've had five straight draws and then a defeat. Included in that are a couple of 0-0s against Bolton and Forest. Would you take a point at Carrow Road on Saturday? Would you go there? No matter what happens at Wolves, it won't really matter for how we take a point there. But a draw on the road at Norwich, yes, everyone else is getting one at the moment, but we'll happily have one as well, won't we?
I guess at this stage of the season, you're looking at games and thinking, what games can we realistically win? What ones are we trying to target a draw out of, because we could very well lose it? And I guess Norwich comes into the latter. Our away form has certainly been better than our home form, but Carrow Road is a very difficult place to go to, but as we found out to our cost last season. But yeah, I would take a point, to be honest. The last couple of weeks, we haven't done too well on the road. We had to kind of hold on against Forest and a difficult game up against Middlesbrough as well. So thinking about how bad things could be, we could quite easily go there and get trounced 7-1. Pity the thought. But with that in mind, go there, get a point, then hopefully get wins elsewhere. Because even a point is quite a big result at this stage of the season.
Yeah, and I think it's always important to remember that Birmingham are on a very bad losing streak at the moment. Sunderland are 8 points behind us, so they're almost something not worth worrying about. And then you've got Burton as well, who are a very, very, you know, not great team who can pull out a great escape. But you only need three teams worse than you to go down, and that's probably something that we can say Reading have just at the moment, although that can change very quickly. In terms of the prediction league, which I obviously haven't updated John in a while, Bolton, the 1-1 draw was seen by both Johnny and Westy, so they moved up onto Johnny is now third, Westy second. Tom Crocker, although he hasn't got anything right in about 5 weeks, is still first. He's on 22 points. Myself and Wim both saw a draw coming against Leeds, so we picked up a point to sit fourth and fifth respectively. Then it's Handbags back in sixth. Wolves away, I think I'm going to have to go for a 2-1 defeat, play it on the safe side for the prediction league standings. And there is also, you know, we think about our narrative and taking a relegation saving win away. There is always the Wolves narrative and how they can have a backs to the wall 2-1 win, and that can sort of nudge them much closer and rejuvenate them as well. So that's why I'm sticking my two pence for this. What would you say is your prediction for the Wolves game, Sam?
I'm going to be bizarrely optimistic and go for a 1-1 draw. One where we score first and we look surprisingly good. We look shockingly good for maybe about the first half, and then we concede a very bad goal in the second half and just about hold on for a point.
See, it's always easier when you're not in the prediction lead to be positive, isn't it? It's always
no pressure.
Yeah, although to be fair, I do keep an eye on what would happen if the predictions were correct, and Tom Crocker winning the prediction league, and he's also the most optimistic out of all of us, so who knows, maybe Yapstam is right after all, it was all our fault. That was a round up this episode of the Tyler Sim podcast. Thank you very much for joining us, Sim. We'll be taking a few breaks from yourself now, as I say, we'll be at the Hall of Fame, then we'll have a week off for the internationals, so enjoy your Easter.
Yeah, you too.
And thank you, everyone, for joining us for this episode. Next Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, will be the next episode up. Podcast Extra on Thursday, reviewing the Wolves game, of course. And it's a couple of away games. Now, we haven't quite made as good a use of the home games as we maybe would have liked, but that just means when we get a point at Wolves on Tuesday night, it's all the better for it. Thank you for joining us, and come on, you Urs. Just starting to see, kissing on the cup of